Okay. Good evening. Welcome to New York City on this lovely, cool fall night. My name is Musho, also known as Rodney Allen Greenblatt, and I am a senior student here at the Village Zendo. I don't know your name. What's your name?
Jordan.
Jordan? Welcome. Of course, welcome to all the regulars. Thank you. Thank you, Shinryu Sensei, for backing me up back there. And also tonight, my daughter is here, which is kind of a surprise, or at least unusual, very unusual. And luckily, she's over 21, because tonight's talk is entitled Intense Male Sexual Desire. So, you know, a Dharma talk is meant to be our own expression here at the Zendo. And our teacher asks us, senior students, to make the Dharma real for ourselves. So tonight, I'm going to talk about the situation. Well, first I want to say, I usually say something to the people who will be listening to this recording, right? We're going to record this, and maybe someone in the distant future might listen to this talk, and they might need to know that this talk is being given in the year 2018. And here in the United States, we've been going through a bit of a cultural convulsion. A new awareness and a kind of a fight against sexual harassment. And the movement that has come to us is called the Me Too movement. And all of this has become very real, I think, recently because of the confirmation hearings of our new Supreme Court judge, Brett Kavanaugh. I was here at the Zendo a few weeks ago for our Sunday class, and as we went around, and there's quite a few people in the class, about 40 people, I realized how really disturbing and troubling the whole process was for so many people, so I decided to do this talk and try to bring a Dharma light in my own way to the subject matter. So as you know from the hearing, if you listen to any part of it, for the senators in the hearing and the news media, there were kind of like two ways to see the testimony. On the left, the hearings were this kind of sickening exposure to sexism and white male privilege. And it was really a question whether this man should be a Supreme Court judge. But on the right side, it was like proof of some kind of conspiracy that is attempting to disrail a very righteous man. And the senators on the right felt he was being vilified and being attacked with political correctness coming from the left. So there's a lot to think about, but I decided to think about it in a much more personal way. And I have a very thin connection, actually, to Judge Kavanaugh, because I went to high school in suburban Maryland 40 years ago. He's a little younger than I am. I'm a few years older, but the setting was exactly the same. I think my high school experience, although I went to public school, and he was in private school, I think the bad behavior of private school students is pretty much the same as the bad behavior of teenage public school students. So the setting was very real to me, and I could put my mind back into those days. This is a Zen talk, so I'm going to start out with a koan, one of our ancient Chinese stories. that we love. And this is one of my favorites. It's case 9 from the Blue Cliff Record. Chow Cho's 4 Gates. A monk asked Chow Cho, "What is Chow Cho?" Chow Cho replied, "East Gate, West Gate, South Gate, North Gate." For me, the monk in the koan seems to be asking, "What or who are you, teacher?" Then Chow Cho answers in his great way. A little background: in those days in ancient China, they often named the teachers after the town where they taught. So Chow Cho is also the name of the town or the city. And so when the monk asked, "What is Chow Cho?" Chow Cho replies, "East Gate, West Gate, South Gate, and North Gate." And I'm sure the town maybe had 4 gates. So the way I see this is that, we are all constructions of our desires, our emotions, our language, our ideals, all the things we've learned, the constructions of our culture, all the knowledge and habits that have been passed down from our parents and our parents before that and before that, maybe even going back 10,000 years. Who knows? And I think the gates that Chow Cho is talking about have to be open to the awareness of that. That all of the things we know and learn have come to us from various sources. And even ourselves, who we think of ourselves, are really products in some ways of these sources. And we should be aware of that. Because when we don't know that, we can close the gates, we can narrow who we are, and then we would only be seeing the world through those constructions. And when that happens, suffering follows. Because we're not just the constructions of our society. And conversely, since this is a Zen talk, on the other side, if we were open the gates to everything, destructive behavior can enter the gates, and that can be normalized, right? When everyone is doing something and it seems like it's normal, it only seems that way, but it isn't. That's my take, but it may not actually be the meaning of the koan. You'll have to discover that for yourself. In my view, sexism is the gate that opens to all other forms of oppression and discrimination. Because when you're able to lower someone's status successfully, you might try to lower other people's status. And the oppression of women in particular is very ancient and worldwide. And it isn't hard to find who to blame. That would be men. And I'm not going to try to create any excuse for our ingrained sexist behavior. But what I kind of wanted to do was to locate, if I could, that source in myself. Because who do I really know? Whose mind can I really get into except my own mind? So I'm going to tell you a sad, stupid story about when I was 16. Actually, my high school reunion just passed. I didn't go. It's down in suburban Maryland, of course. My 40th high school reunion. But anyway, when I was 16, I was having an average, awful adolescence. Pretty typical, I think. And when the Kavanaugh hearings kind of exposed or opened a light to that adolescent boy behavior, I could definitely contact that and see what that was like for me, because I do remember it a bit. But I was actually the almost the exact opposite of Brett Kavanaugh. Totally the opposite. He was a football player and all these kind of stuff. But I was not athletic at all, and I had no interest in sports. And I was very short and nerdy, and I loved art, crafts, making music, and wandering about in art museums. And I also liked being by myself. So basically, I haven't changed very much. But that was the type of kid I was. But despite my unmasculine personality, one of my main anxiety-producing preoccupations was a deep hope that I would have a sexual relationship with one of the girls I had a crush on. I just couldn't let go of this. And my little story is here. When I was 16 and 17, there was one girl in particular that I was very focused on. And I actually became friends with her. And we did things that friends would do, like go to the museum or drive around in a car. I used to pick her up at work. She worked in a sewing shop, which was really nice. I liked sewing. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that she was my friend, actually. Because in my mind, the difference between friend and girlfriend was really huge. And looking at it now, I think that the term girlfriend meant to me that she was going to be a possible sexual partner. But by far, I was way too awkward and shy to ask. And I was not ready for that kind of a relationship. And it never happened, right? But I couldn't stop thinking about it. And when we parted to go to college and weren't going to see each other anymore, I kind of felt disappointed, as if it were somehow her fault and that was supposed to happen. And, you know, I actually, thinking back at it now, I feel a little ashamed about it all. Because actually, I was missing a friendship that would have been very easy. A friendship very much like my friends who were boys. But instead, the hormones, the changes in your body, whatever it was forcing me to think that I should have had that kind of relationship with her. And I'm kind of sorry about that. So compared to the other things that could have gone wrong, that was not very dramatic. But I want to say that from my own experience, and I think many others, intense male sexual desire is just as it is. It's desire. And desire in itself is not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just desire. But I think there is a way that it is transformed. If you take the average sexual desire of a boy or a man, just the average desire that you might feel, but you add to that physical power, entitlement, loneliness, frustration, social anxiety, anger, it can become a very volatile and overpowering and destructive emotion, desire, urge. Then on top of that, if you add the continuing stereotypes of masculinity and femininity that we all for some reason have to deal with in our lives, if you add that to that mix, then sexual desire becomes a power play, kind of a form of, and it can become a form of domination. And that is where so much suffering comes. And as you know, that hideous mix of desire and frustration and all the other things I mentioned can bring down the most powerful men. Politicians, corporate leaders, movie moguls, TV stars, artists, and of course, spiritual teachers are brought down by these desires. The legacies of these harassments and abuse of power and sometimes even criminal acts cannot be excused. I was thinking in my talk of making a list of men's names who have succumbed to this tragedy, but I decided not to. And if I did make a list like that, it would actually include also the names of Buddhist teachers, unfortunately. And as you know, priests and rabbis and everyone else in this business go down sometimes. And their teachings are ruined, and their community is broken up. I don't really have to talk about it. You all probably have read and been shocked by when this very typical thing happens. So what I want to know is, when does it end? How can this pattern be stopped? How can the gender stereotypes be discredited? How can we be free? How can the suppressed desires that we have be calmed? How can they be okay? I really don't know. But I would recommend meditation. Meditation would be a start. We're talking about a huge problem here, going on for years and years, maybe 10,000 years, when we were like cave people. Where to start? I'm going to say meditation. Meditation. Just sitting facing the wall and following the breath. When you do that, you become aware of the endless production of your own thoughts. And when you start looking at your thoughts, you just have to wonder, who or what am I? And the answer to that would be East Gate, West Gate, South Gate, and North Gate. So meditation is a start. And then maybe after that, how about some atonement? Or maybe an apology. An apology that never has to be accepted. So right now, I apologize to all the women in the world from beginningless time for my inexcusable greed, anger, and ignorance. I'm very sorry. Guys out there, if you're listening, you can learn to transform greed into generosity. You can transform anger into compassion. And you can transform ignorance into wisdom. You really can. You can stop confusing anger with strength. They're different. You can stop confusing power with passion. Those two are different. And you can show some respect to women and also all beings. Why not? How about respect for all beings? And after that, more meditation. Long retreats, I would recommend. When you do meditation here at the Village Zendo and many other Zen centers, they also teach a set of moral precepts. And I have done that precept study, and I have vowed to follow the precepts myself. And we have a precept number 3, called not misusing sex. Now, I am not going to give you a lesson on the precepts. That would not be my place. But I will read the precept to you of not misusing sex. And we have 3 versions from different time periods. And they're short, but I thought I would read it so you could understand what our precepts sound like. The first one comes from the kind of ancient Chinese founder of Zen, Bodhidharma. This is from 1,000 years ago at least. Bodhidharma says, "Self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the ungilded Dharma, not creating a veneer of attachment, is called the precept of not misusing sex. Then, from medieval Japan, is Dogen Zenji, Japanese Zen master. He says, the three wheels are pure and clear. When you have nothing to desire, you follow the way of all Buddhas. And finally, our contemporary teachers, the Zen peacemakers, I think maybe from the 1960s? 1990s, have come up with this. Encountering all creations with respect and dignity, this is the precept of chaste conduct. I think they're pretty interesting. If you have interest in our precepts here, we have a whole program in the summer to find out about the precepts and to embody them in yourself, your own way. So getting back to me, can I follow these precepts myself without fail? Can I follow my own guidelines from this talk? You know, I hope to be a Zen teacher someday, and I already lead a little sitting group up where I live in upstate in the Hudson Valley in Catskill, the town of Catskill. And in that role, can I say without fail that I will never give in to my sexual desire? If I say I never will, then I deserve 30 whacks with a stick. If I say I might, then I deserve another 30 whacks. A monk asked Chao Cho, what is Chao Cho? Chao Cho replied, East Gate, West Gate, South Gate, and North Gate. There's a verse. These koans each have a poem. The verse goes like this. In their words, they show their ability in direct confrontation. The adamantine eye is completely void of dust. East, west, south, and north, the gates face each other. An endless series of hammer blows can't smash them open. Adamantine means unbreakable. An unbreakable eye that's completely void of dust. And then an endless series of hammer blows can't smash open the gates. Maybe it's because the gates are open. Finally, I want to recommend a documentary film that is called The Mask You Live In. It's from 2015, and it's by filmmaker Jennifer Siebel Newsom. I'll read you the description of the film. The Mask You Live In follows boys and young men as they struggle to stay true to themselves while negotiating America's narrow definition of masculinity. Research shows that compared to girls, boys in the U.S. are more likely to be diagnosed with a behavior disorder, prescribed stimulant medications, fail out of school, binge drink, commit a violent crime, and or take their own lives. It's a fantastic documentary. It's fascinating and so sad. It is heartbreaking. To try to actually deconstruct masculinity, it's almost impossible to do. But people do try. There's beautiful teachers in this movie trying to help adolescents. So I recommend it. And you can watch it on iTunes and on Amazon Video. So I hope my talk tonight was helpful. And to end, I want to read the pointer from case 9. So each one of these koans has an introduction. And the introductions themselves are kind of like a koan. And sometimes they are actually the answer. And sometimes they're not. They're just more puzzling Zen words, but I thought this one was beautiful, so I'm going to read it. When the bright mirror is on the stand, beauty and ugliness are distinguished by themselves. With a sharp sword in his hand, one can kill or bring life to fit the occasion. A foreigner goes and a native comes. A foreigner comes and a native goes. In the midst of death, he finds life. In the midst of life, he finds death. But tell me, when you get to this point, then what? If you don't have the eye to penetrate barriers, if you don't have any place to turn yourself around in, at this point, obviously, you won't know what to do. Tell me, what is the eye that penetrates barriers? What is the place to turn around in? To test, I cite this. Look. Thank you for listening.